Mexican hot pocket is where you shit in some sheets. I think calling someone a dog is offensive or, well, insulting, no matter who it is.
You don't say sitcom? I say sitcom all the time.
I say sit cunt, yeah.
I often use a pun of it.
Sick cunt.
Sick.
Robert Pattinson, I think, is his name.
People hate going into the store. People hate talking to other people.
People that would be well-versed in technology, but not well-versed in people.
I'm Oliver Fisher. Welcome to our inaugural podcast, tentatively known The Jeff Project.
Working title. I think we'll probably stick with that for a while.
I mean, that could be the first episode. The topic of the first episode could be, what do we title?
How do we present ourselves to the world? What is the expression of our
body? Who are we? I mean, yeah, like you said, that's the big question, right? Who
are we? The expression of our ideas, man. This is something so deep. You know, it cuts
right
into
the name. Is a podcast defined by a name, or does the name define the podcast?
Knowing the name of a thing does not give you knowledge of the thing itself, as the great man once said.
All right, I've named and shamed myself. Who's going to jump in next? I'm going to poffer up there.
Well, I'm Alexander, the other half of the dynamic duo, and then there's Jeff. I guess
my name is Jeff.
Just like the black sheep that just clings on, but he's just so infamous that he gets a podcast named after him.
Yeah, how'd that happen anyway?
Because you're the soul of the podcast, my man.
Sweet. Oh, I'm flattered.
I'm pretty excited. That was our one task for this podcast, to introduce ourselves, and we've done it.
All right, sweet. Let's wrap it up.
Do we now just like snuggle for the next 28 minutes?
That gave me chills.
So that's done. Next step, Dutch ruddering each other. Is that the natural progression?
Let's not get xenophobic.
How is that xenophobic?
It's not really xenophobic. It's more like
that's offensive
to
the
Dutch. Mutual masturbation. So
why are the Dutch associated with mutual masturbation? Do you think? Because like you think about the name. Like, why is it called the Dutch rudder?
I assume there's, like, a big affiliation with windmills and generating their power for the farms. And there's going to be something in the motion there.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. That would be my two cents.
Is there a type of rudder developed in the Netherlands that's like... Wait, I'm going to Google that. Wait, let me Google Dutch rudder. Hang on.
Ask me a million questions that I never would have predicted that the podcast would go in the direction of.
Yeah, it's going to be.
What is a Dutch rudder and what is the foundation?
Forever now, our first show note is going to be
Dutch ruddering. Right?
Firstly.
I think our only knowledge of it is the Zach and Miri make a porno.
Well, I was going to say, I Googled it and the only results that come up are Zach and Miri make a porno.
Yeah, I was going to say, of course it's a made up generic term.
Well, the term was around before Zach and Miri, wasn't it?
It's the first I heard of it.
It was the first I heard of it was on Urban Dictionary, but that was because of Zach and Miri.
Mm.
Okay, here's a suggested search term. Why is it called a Dutch rudder?
What do I win if I got it pretty much bang on with my description?
Ah, here we go. The Pluger rudder, also known as a Dutch rudder, is a power-assisted ship's rudder.
Ah, ship's rudder.
There you go.
Makes sense.
I'm sure that's somehow.
And I guess when you're at sea for that long a period and you're waiting in between the port stops, you got to do something to fill the time.
I wonder if submarines employ a lot of Dutch ruddering in their...
I guess there's plenty of seamen on a big vessel like that.
Yeah. Good one. Lots of crusty seamen.
On you with all the classic dad jokes.
I guess it's just called a Dutch rudder because it sounds funny and not actually because it's got anything to do with the Dutch, which is disappointing, you know.
Probably their world-renowned tourist attraction being the Red Light District in Amsterdam. It's like, yeah, let's just name a make-believe sex term. And it's got credibility because of that.
Okay, that's called the Dutch rudder. So then ask yourself, why is it called the Mexican Hot Pocket? Where, how did that get its name?
I love how you think that's the natural progression.
Can you explain the Mexican hot pot? And I might be able to, like, draw some logical conclusion from that.
Can you draw me a diagram?
No, can you give me an explanation of what you're referring to?
Mexican Hot Pocket, isn't that weird?
I think I know what you're referring to.
You know what I'm talking about. All right.
I think I do.
For the benefit of Oliver, who may be a bit, and anyone else listening who may not know what I'm talking about, this is on based on memory, but I'm pretty sure a Mexican Hot Pocket is where you you shit in some sheets and then you pick them up like a swag. That is apparently a Mexican Hot Pocket.
But now you have to explain what a swag is for the international listeners, because we've got so many of those.
Oh, if you don't know what a swag is, look that up yourself.
And then when they say to someone in the future that they know what a swag is, they're like, oh, you're so well, like, you know Australian culture so well, like, how do you know that? Like, oh, yeah, I was listening to this podcast once, and they talked about putting something into a swag.
Yeah, creating a swag. Well, that's the thing. It's like, why would you call that a Mexican Hot Pocket? What's it got to do with Mexicans? Oh, it's, come on, man. It's like so offensive. You could call it the Aussie swag instead. It's a bunch of shit in a blanket, right?
There's no logic to
that's a swag. No logic. Mexican Hot Pocket is the act of unfolding a hider bed, dropping a juice, and refolding for some unexpected individual to find at a later time. What is Mexican about that? Oliver, please explain.
And drawing a complete blank. A few things leave me speechless. But
see, to me, I just thought a Mexican Hot Pocket was just a beloved American snack that is like a pizza pocket, but they add more jalapenos and some other...
Oh, so it's a Mexican-style Hot Pocket. You know what? That actually sounds really nice, actually. I would eat that.
Have you ever had a Hot Pocket?
You heard it here first, folks.
Google but I would definitely eat a Mexican Hot Pocket. Pocket and not the one that we were talking about earlier.
How do you know you like Hot Pockets if you don't have
them? Well, they sound tasty. I don't know. They just sound tasty. All right, fine. I would definitely try a Hot Pocket, and I'd be even more inclined to try Alex's imagination of what a Mexican Hot Pocket would be.
That's the soundbite. You got that.
I'm sure there's probably a recipe. We could probably make Hot Pockets.
Yeah, probably.
Out of context, Jeff quotes. I want Alex's
Hot Pocket. I want Alex's Hot Pocket, baby. Give me your Hot Pocket. That was the question on the tip of my mind.
Oh, they're like a... Hot Pockets are like a savory apple pie. You ever had like apple pies from McDonald's?
Oh, right. Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like those Macca's apple pies,
it's
right?
Exactly like an apple pie, but it's savory. It's just got cheese in it.
So instead of apple, jalapenos, right?
That's so weird that we don't have them here.
And beans. You know, it's just a burrito, right? A Mexican Hot Pocket is just a burrito, by the sounds.
Right.
Peter, about the Macca's thing is we're the only country in the world that calls it Macca's. And we're the only one that has approval, which is just such a weird Aussie thing to do.
It's because we love abbreviating shit. Yeah.
Let's give everything a nickname.
I mean, we don't just call it Macca's. We call it Mickey D's, McD's. Like, do other countries do that?
Yeah, but we're the only country in the world that has officially licensed name.
I think it's more weird.
Oh, yeah, we've trademarked that, haven't we? That's a trademark in this country.
Yeah. So they're the only one that's had approval from the head office in the US to actually change the name on a sign because the brand is so important to them. Quintessential Aussie bogan culture.
I don't think anyone here actually calls it McDonald's. I'd say 99% of the time whenever people talk about it, it's... Yeah, it'd mostly be Macca's. Mickey D's, I think I use sometimes.
I sometimes say McDonald's. Posh as fuck.
Yeah, but most, you got to think the core
fucking
demo
townie of the group.
McDonald's is Shazza and Dazza. Popping down by the servo to get some ciggies.
Yeah.
After that, we'll go to Macca's.
Yeah, go to Macca's, watch some Darro assault the fucking cleaner in the toilet. Fucking dog!
I like there's something about like bogan crackheads that they just there's something really endearing about them.
there's something about bogan crackheads.
They just dog to them is the ultimate insult. Nothing will ever come close to calling someone a dog. To them it's the most callous thing you could ever possibly conceive. Once you get called a dog by them, you could just be walking down the street and just give them a weird side glance, but it cuts deep. When they call you a dog, it cuts deep. It's like, oh, I've got to reassess my whole life. If this person doesn't approve of my lifestyle, what does that say about me?
I think calling someone a dog is offensive or, well, insulting, no matter who it is. Like, I don't think it's just for bogans, right? Like, I would consider calling someone a dog to be pretty insulting.
But I think it's the worst thing you can say to someone in Australia. That is like, nothing surpasses that for them.
The funniest thing is, like, I could say to you, oh, man, like, Oliver, what a sick cunt. But if I say Oliver's a dog cunt, the meaning becomes the complete opposite all of a sudden. I think that's the worst thing you can call someone in this country is a dog cunt.
I don't know. I think that's just because sick cunt is a pretty specific, commonly used phrase, though.
Yeah.
I don't think dog's that insulting.
A commonly used phrase.
Again, the townie doesn't think dog is that insulting.
You don't say sick cunt? I say sick cunt all the time.
I say sick cunt, yeah.
I often use a comma, though.
Sick cunt.
Sick. Like, I'll just see something and it'll just fall out of me. And just like, I'll just turn to the person next to me. That's sick.
Sick cunt, mad cunt. I use mad cunt.
I'm surprised there isn't a bogan sitcom. Not a bogan, crackhead.
There is a bogan sitcom.
Yeah, I know there is a bogan sitcom.
There is, but, yeah, I was going
to
say.
But just like, how good a sitcom would it be to just like, just you follow the lives of five crackheads?
God, that would be... That'd be the biggest roller coaster journey of your life.
Are you sure that doesn't exist?
That's why I'm saying surprised it doesn't. It should, right?
And I guess Requiem for a Dream is just the feature length film interpretation of that.
There's probably
adapt this great show.
I guess there's other countries that have it. Like there'd be an American version of it, but there isn't an Aussie like methed up sitcom.
Methed up
sitcom. There we go.
Surely that animator guy, Michael Cusack, surely he's done something like that. The guy who did Darren and Damo.
Oh, yeah, Darren and Damo.
I guess Darren and Damo is exactly what I'm talking about.
I wouldn't say they're meth heads. They don't, like, they're just
They're just Darrows. They're just, like, bogan. What would the title be for your...
What, mate?
...head sitcom? That's I think I'd call it Shepparton Stories.
No, you couldn't say Shepparton.
I'd call it...
Yeah.
I'd
Shepparton.
Call it... No. Now I've got the perfect name. Ice House. Isn't there a band called Ice House? That's a band, right?
Yeah, there was.
And they are Australian, aren't they?
Or you could have Memoirs of Melton.
Are you just coming up with these names just because you want to pay out these places? You're just trying to...
I just realized that I'm getting like half of metropolitan Melbourne.
Should I call it out?
Most of provincial Victoria as well.
Yeah, but as you pay out one, the rest becomes stronger.
That's true. We really need to
pay out one,
focus in on our core demo and alien the rest and get the band together in our.
We need to decide a place that's going to be like our go-to for calling out a place. Like anytime we're talking about how shit some people are, whatever place you have in your mind, you replace it with this other place. And I vote Franger.
It's our litmus test. What's our real barometer for really, really sketch?
What is the sketchiest place in Melbourne, you think?
Well, we could do that as like a thing for our podcast. Every episode we can host in a bar in some random sketchy part of Melbourne. And sort of like bet how long until we get, I don't know, bashed or something.
Nah. I've seen an episode of old school Blue Heelers when someone gets a pub glass in their neck. So I really don't want to go to Melton and be the first one to cop a pint glass in the neck.
And they have to say to people when they're like, oh, what happened? You have to explain them like, oh, yeah, so I was in Melton doing this podcast, right?
And the theme of the podcast was how shit melts.
But, Alex, you've got to take one for the team. Imagine how instantly popular we'd get because we'd be in the news.
That's true. Innocent podcasters violently assaulted.
Podcaster with one listener.
Do you want to get a lot of subscribers? Is that your aim?
Not at all.
No, I want money.
I think it's always quality over quantity. Not everyone's going to... It's not going to be a universally loved thing, but if there's a couple of people out there that share the same opinion, that'd be pretty cool, pretty funny.
Just three people that are obsessed with it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to jump the shark. Like, well, because I was going to say, like, you guys have listened to the H3H3 podcast, right?
Yeah.
And that one, that podcast jumped the shark.
Oh, really? I think I've only seen it from when you send me parts of it.
Yeah, I don't think I ever went.
And when was the last time I sent you a clip from that?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. So I've only seen, what's bad about it now?
I don't know, man. Like, it's just, it seems very forced these days. I don't, yeah, like they're forcing content. I feel like they've got this regular schedule now and they don't know what to do. So they just force shit. It's like, just take a break. Stop podcasting for a little while.
Yeah, it gets to a point in any endeavor where you just hit a creative block. And unless you're a Joe Rogan that just punches out.
But Joe Rogan has guests.
And he has access to anyone he wants.
Yeah.
And the backlog of people that he has and the diversity of his podcast just keeps it fresh.
That's why it doesn't get boring, because
he has to walk away as well. That's why he talks a lot about that, about
100%.
That's why he walked away. He was just looking for a paycheck. And now he can do... Like, he doesn't, he talks about that a lot, is that he doesn't have any pressures on him. He just does what he wants to do because he's got enough cash from Fear Factor to not give a crap.
That's when you're at your most creative, when you're doing it as a passion project and nothing else. Genuine love for it, then you're never going
to get that. He kind of shows that you have to either be doing, you can't like be in the middle. You have to either do something you don't give a shit about that you know is crap, and that like you just want it for the money, or you just like want lots of popularity, or do something that's just really, really good and you don't give a shit about how popular it is. It's the people that try and do something in the middle that's like they're trying to make it good, but they're also trying to make it popular, that just crash and burn.
It's just pandering, and people see through that so quickly. It's like, yeah, it's interesting.
If you just like leave something for 6 months and then come back to it, you still got everyone who liked it before. But if you keep trying to push through, you just like start losing people.
Yeah, exactly right. There's only so much people tolerate.
But like, you'd still be on their subscriber list and stuff. So if you don't do anything for 6 months, but then come back and suddenly, you know, they don't even, all the time they don't even notice. It's like, oh, okay, there's a new one of it out.
Yeah, it's just like what Harvey Dent says: you live long enough to become the villain, or you die. Die the hero. Resurrect yourself, come back with a vengeance.
Wait, was it Harvey Dent that said that or Batman?
I'm pretty sure it was Harvey Dent.
I'm pretty sure he was quoting like Julius Caesar or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, but...
Harvey Dent, he said it. Most people know it from Harvey Dent.
Technically, it is, because he did say it.
So it was Batman quoting Harvey Dent quoting Caesar.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. You know, Caesar got stabbed in the back like, what, 20 times? Harvey Dent became the monster he feared. I don't know if people quoting that generally have a great end.
I think they're making a new Batman with the guy from Twilight.
Yeah, they are. Robert Pattinson, I think, is his name.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think from what I've heard, he's actually a good actor. It's just a shame that he did Twilight.
Yeah, I heard the same thing. I saw this list and it was like, before you cast judgment over the casting of the new Batman, watch these 7 movies and it will actually change your opinion completely.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what you were saying around do something for a paycheck and get your exposure and get a platform, and then you can pick what projects you want to do.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
He went down. He needed that tipping point of having enough exposure and enough credibility in the bank to have these big studios bankroll whatever passion project he wanted to do after that, and that was where he really showed what he could do, so...
Yeah, I saw an interview with him once where he was saying that, because someone said it to me. They were like, this is hilarious, like, for all these people that love Twilight, because he's just paying out Twilight. Because he said in an interview, like, yeah, I hate Twilight. Like, Twilight's the worst, but it's my job, man.
20 bucks.
Yeah. And now since then he's done Twilight. Like, I saw Tenet, I think, last weekend. Spoilers.
Yeah, I really want to see that.
Oh, shit, and, I need to see that.
It was better than I thought it was going to be.
So, I heard, yeah, fuck, dude, I remember watching a trailer for that. Thinking like, ooh, that looks trippy as fuck. I need to watch that. Might watch it after I hang up, actually, if I can find it. But I forgot that movie was coming out. I even sent you guys the trailer. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me.
So what's the deal with that? Our cinema's back in action. It's hard to keep up with restrictions and Is it spacing or limited capacity? Or
we were the only ones in the movie theater.
Whoa.
It was at Crown. Yeah, so like a big and like just empty. It was awesome.
That is a pretty cool private screening. You wonder how they have the overheads on that.
We didn't even pay either. Like, it was some voucher that he got from a gift or something, I think he had, so.
Crown's probably got them locked into this, like, long-term agreement where it's like they just have to run or pay the penalty fees but to Crown for not operating, even through a global pandemic.
I mean, it could have gone either way, right? Like, because they just opened up restrictions. There are actually a lot of people out and about walking around. It was just none of them inside the cinema because people are like, oh, I haven't been able to do anything for ages. I'm going to go shopping. I think a lot of people probably assumed it was.
Yeah, pent up demand. Everyone wants to get out and about, but whether they want to speak.
So it could have gone either way. It could have been packed, but it wasn't.
Can we talk about that for a minute? Why the fuck are movie theaters not dead yet?
Oh, I thought you meant the pandemic.
No.
I thought they were going to die.
That's so
like the movie theaters should have been dying. Yeah. They were already dying. Yeah, fewer and fewer people go to the movies year on year. And then the pandemic hits and people just fucking can't go anymore. And yet they're still open. It's ridiculous. A lot of small businesses have closed because of this shit. But all these fucking big cinemas.
Well, they've just consolidated, haven't they? There's Hoyts and then there's Village. And most of the small ones have already gone over the last, 10, 20 years.
That's sad, man, because the small ones are the good ones. And the big ones are just fucking pushing them out.
There's a cool thing local cinemas were doing up in Belgrave. And they were...
Was that Cameo?
Shout out to Cameo Cinemas.
Shout out to Cameo. I really like Cameo. Cameo's great.
Cameo plug. Hey, Cameo, give us some money.
Yes. They were doing, you could book out the entire cinema for your own private screening, or you could book a gaming experience. So you could hook up whatever gaming you want for.
Yeah, to a screen.
And split the screen type of thing. So. At least, these small businesses are being creative and trying to find a way around it because, even when the strict restrictions started slowly easing and you could have 20 in groups, at least you could socially distance and then book it and still have that experience because, it's...
And these big cinemas...
When you say, why haven't cinemas died, have you heard the story about Blockbuster and when Netflix approached them back in the day when they were in their infancy? So they pitched to Blockbuster and asked if they wanted to invest in their startup. And they said, look, the DVD rentals in the post is just the start. Longer term, we envisage internet and streaming direct to people's homes.
Yeah.
And Blockbuster said, thanks, but no thanks. We think the experience of people coming into the store is invaluable and people won't want to give that up.
No,
and,
people hate that.
Look at Blockbuster and look at Netflix now, so...
People That's hate great. Going into the store. People hate talking to other people. That's the reality.
You buy self-serve checkouts.
Right. That's why they're so popular. And online ordering, Uber Eats and shit like that. No one wants to no one even wants to call up for a delivery. They'd much rather just punch in some fucking buttons on a phone. You can call up and order a pizza.
Unfortunately, they say it's like a massive phobia of answering a phone. They get massive anxiety. When the phone starts ringing, they just fear that there's the interaction, even on a phone, is daunting.
Is that something that is a negative from our generation? Or is it just the fact that we lucky enough to have the privilege to not ever have to do that? Like, how do they know that people didn't always have that anxiety? It was just masked by the fact they didn't have a fucking choice.
That's a good point. They just grit and say, this is our life. So
yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's really interesting.
I hear that about a lot of things. Like, I think I don't want to say this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I hear a lot of boomers say things sometimes. And I think, you're talking about that as if you've got this kind of nostalgia or, people don't do this anymore. It's like, people don't stop doing things that are great, you know? If we're not doing it anymore, it's because it sucked. You're just trying to make excuses for why you don't feel bad that you didn't have this most of your life. But just face the reality, it's better now, and that you had to do it all of your life sucked. And it's a shame, but it's not that bad. Just calm down.
I think rose-colored glasses and nostalgia is, you can't underestimate that effect. And it's so true. There's a reason why these things die out. You just evolve past that. But yeah, nostalgia is just huge.
Well, online ordering is so much more convenient than getting in a car or getting on a bus, going to a shop, having to fucking wade through human filth on the streets and, like, you know, talk to someone. Oh, fucking check out this product and that product. No, you just go online, click a few buttons, boom, it comes to your house.
Yeah, like people talking real windswept about writing letters. Like, oh, no one writes letters anymore. Like, well, they would if letters were really good. If they were, if getting a letter felt better than the effort of writing a letter, like, people would still do it. But they don't do it anymore because email is just as good. It's just as nice getting an email, and it doesn't suck.
Well, people don't even write writing emails. People prefer to instant message.
Yeah, it's the formality is every step takes a reduction in the formality that is people's preference. So an email is more preferable to writing a letter, and instant message is more preferable to an email because you can drop those formalities and just blast out whatever you want, and there's no social etiquette, basically.
Yeah. I prefer, personally, I think talking to people in person is more efficient than using instant messaging or email. There's a lot of context that's left behind when you use purely text-based form of communication. I think I read somewhere once, like, when you're communicating with someone in person, something like only 20% of what you're getting across is in the content of your words. Like, the rest of it is things like your body language, your inflection, facial expression, things like that. There's a lot more that you convey when talking in person.
Yeah, so I've come across this thing recently with language learning called comprehensible input. And the idea is that you don't learn a language, you acquire it. And it's because only like 20% is the actual words that you're saying. The best way to learn a language isn't to try and read or to like look at grammar or to even have like phone conversations. The best way to do it is to have visual and audio or like in person so that you can see, as you said, like the inflection and the facial expression and especially like tons of movement. Apparently that's when we're young, how we acquire.
I was going to say, that's how toddlers learn, isn't it?
Yeah, when we're young, we have constant comprehensible input. So comprehensible input is when you can understand what is being said from the context. That constant repetition of context, you know, the word, hearing the word when you know that's what's being referred to. So like constantly hearing the word TV when someone's turning it off or on again, or like they're gesturing towards it, that's the only way that we actually learn language. Yeah, whacking on it, being like, this bloody TV.
Stupid,
like,
TV.
You hear the word bloody or like stupid or I hate this. And that might change, but every single sentence has the word TV in it and they're hitting the TV. It's like, oh, okay, I think that's a TV.
Yeah, especially it's one thing that I think people are going to start to take away after the pandemic is communicating online. Simple text messages inadequate for a lot of things that you're trying to get across. Because I think people, when working from home started, people tried that a lot, found it didn't work, started having to do phone calls, started having to do video calls. One thing we noticed in our office was, and you know what, it's probably the Spurgs that I work with, well, correction, one Spurg that I used to work with, that would always infer the worst possible meaning from things that were said within the team or in private chats.
How could you say that?
What do you do for the audience, for context?
Computers.
The computer.
So we're talking about, I mean, like we're talking about people that really should be well-versed in technology, right?
People that would be well-versed in technology, but not well-versed in people. Right, we're talking about on the spectrum sort of characters. So they're the people that lose out, I think, a lot from just simply using text based.
And what spectrum is that for the listeners?
What was that?
What spectrum is that you're referring to for the listeners?
A particular spectrum that I'm sure everyone knows what I'm talking about. Autism.
Why do you say that with like a Holland accent? Or
it's
the
Bruno
Netherlands
reference. Yeah, it's the Bruno reference.
What's out?
Why is autism in at the moment? Oh, because it's like really, really funny. Yeah. So that was an interesting thing that I noticed when we started working from home and people were leveraging instant messaging and team chat a lot more, is that there was more spurging out, like, you said this thing to me, blah, blah, blah.
I want someone else to decide what's good or bad. So we just chat, no pressure to work out what we think was good content, what was bad content. But if we're getting tired, can you finish up? I'm happy to do two. I'm happy to go for a...
But right, make sure when you wrap up, don't forget to smash that subscribe button. Give us a thumbs up.
Your call to action. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think podcasts have buttons, do they?
But we'll have buttons. We can have buttons. Platform.
But what's important is we're going to be doing this. We're going to keep chugging along. So
yeah, this is pretty fun. This is good. And then, there's no agenda. It just goes on whatever crazy tangent you want. And,
yeah. So if you're going to be on a train going somewhere, you know, bored shitless, and you want to feel like you're having beers with your mates, because you always want.
That's what this is.
You always want to feel like that, really, right? So anytime you can put some headphones in and feel like you're having beers with your mates, if that's your thing, you should.
And by the way, we do condone drinking in public. If you want to drink along to this podcast with us,
you should hit that subscribe button.
So by all means, just go for it. Flip send that. The fines to Civic Compliance.
I'm sure it's legal in some places. It's legal in Amsterdam, isn't it? All the good stuff. Drinking in public. I actually haven't been, but it sounds like all the good stuff's in Amsterdam. Aren't mushrooms legal in Amsterdam? What a great place to live. Here I am picking them like some chump.
All right, well, that's pretty spicy, alluding to the fact that you pick illegal substances. I think that's a good...
That's a good point to cut.
That's a good cliffhanger for people next week. Ooh, what's this? What's this about? How's that?
Someone,
come back and find out about maybe illicit substances on this podcast.
What a naughty boy.
Unless you're not.
Come back for Jeff's trip to Amsterdam and his 2-week hotel quarantine stay.
If you are listening and you're a narc, that was a joke.
Although, if you're listening and you're narc, that's still a subscriber. Actually, I don't want to turn away narcs just because they're narcs.
Yeah, no, I'm not turning you away. I'm just saying that was a joke.
Narcs are people too.
Yeah, narcs are people too. Just because you don't share the same views. They're good people. They just don't know when to zip it. They don't realize snitches get stitches and end up in ditches.
Touts get shot. All right, closing remarks.
Jesus, sounds like we're in a fucking meeting now.
We are. It's a meeting of the minds.
Minds on the spectrum, maybe.
Is that how people end your meetings? That's such a lame way to make professional meetings.
Not exactly, but yeah, how one guy who runs meetings ends them. Dude, meetings. Who the fuck enjoys meetings? Weirdos.
I guess to sign off, I've been Alexander.
I've been Oliver.
And Jeff, baby. I don't think we need to do any of that.
This is tentatively, for now, the Jeff Project. Thank you for listening.